Mason. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Welcome to Next Fan Up, the show by the fans for the fans. This is Justin. I'm your Seahawks super fan. My team's not playing today, but I'm still going to help host alongside my buddy Nick, the Chiefs super fan, as we talk about all the games that did take place this weekend. Before we dive into it, though, I want to give a quick thank you to our sponsor, BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. Been in business for over 20 years. Use our promo code FANUP10. Get a free $10 with your first deposit. You also get a 100% bonus. BetDSI is safe, easy to use. They pay out your winnings fast. You can bet on all sorts of things. Bet on sports, bet on football. If you watch the debates tonight, you can bet on who you think will win the election. All sorts of great things. They've got awesome lines to follow. Give you kind of the inside track. So that's BetDSI.com. Use promo code FANUP10. And then let's get right to the recaps.
That's right, it's me. I am your Kansas City Chiefs super fan, Nick. And that means, if you're hearing my voice, it's time to break down some games. And the first game on our slate here is the Washington Redskins' 16-10 win over the Baltimore Ravens on the road, but not a very long road. This may not have been the most exciting game throughout, I guess the early quarters, but it was pretty much the only game in the early slate that came down to the last seconds. And I'm here with Neil, our Redskins super fan, to break it down. Neil, how nervous were you in the last 30 seconds of this thing?
How nervous was I, Nick? Well, I was hiding behind my sofa for most of the last sort of 10 minutes of this game, just sort of poking my head out above the sofa with one eye to look at the score and see what the position of the game was. It was a cliffhanger. It was a nail biter. Choose any expression you want there, and just insert it. It was, oh God, oh Nick, say something nice, Nick.
Well, the Redskins are now on a 3-game winning streak. You beat a winning team, which has been one of those knocks that there's been against Kirk Cousins, your quarterback, is that he hasn't really beat many winning teams. So on that level, you guys are looking pretty good. However, talking to you off the air, it sounds like you continue to have a lot of concerns about this squad.
Oh, yes. I think that there are still concerns. Well, one concern I don't have, really, is the offense. The offense is doing all right. And we are putting enough points on the board. My problem has been, as I've said every week, Nick, it's the defense, and it puts a lot of pressure on the offense to score points, forces them to probably throw the ball a bit more than they probably should do. And what we saw tonight was a Ravens team which really did nothing much in the second half, but they drove all the way down the field. And you know that old expression, which really just means you've got a bad defense, which is bend but don't break. Our defense is a bit like that tonight. They were moving the ball up and down on us, but we just somehow managed to either create enough plays or just make the occasional stop to keep the Ravens out. Like I said to you off air, I felt this was a game that was said more about the Ravens than it did Washington. Ravens went up 7-0 in the first quarter with a really good solid drive on the first possession. And you thought, oh goodness me, this looks like it's going to be a long night. And Terrence West, he continued on. He got 95 yards on 11 carries. So that's a pretty good day for the Washington run defense. When you're keeping the guy below 9 yards a carry, that's a result. Anyway, then we got a bit of a break with our second year wide receiver, Jameson Crowder, who has had a really good start to the season, and boom, hit an 85-yard punt return, which brought us back into the game at 7-6. And then, Nick, what it's like when your kicker misses the extra point, and you sit there for the next hour thinking, that's going to cost us at the end of the game. That's going to be the difference between winning and losing. And as it went right down to the wire tonight, oh, blooming heck, I was thinking, no, that blooming extra point. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Then there was a big play, really. It was a fumble recovery by Matt Jones. Matt Jones fumbled, and it was recovered by Orr, the defender for Baltimore. But then Washington put in a little bit of a stand, and they kept him to a 3-yard pass, then a minus 2 yards on the next pass, minus 3 yards on a run, and a run for a loss where we stopped the Ravens on 3 consecutive downs. And then they went for a set up for a field goal and went for the fake field goal and threw the ball. Tucker, the punter, threw the ball in the end zone, and well, before the end zone, it hit one of our players on that. I think it hit him on the head, and whooped up into the air, fell incomplete, and we took over on downs. That was the that was a real turning point in the first half. So half time, we're sitting at Ravens 10, Washington 6. Then Pete Waiter, our underused wide receiver, got a 21-yard touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins. That put us into the lead, and what turned out to be into the lead for good. Then of course, there was the play, which I'm sure Don still can't believe actually happened tonight, and that was Kirk Cousins dropped back in the end zone, threw the ball across the middle for looking for Jordan Reed. Didn't see the linebacker, Mosley. He just jumped up, intercepted the pass, and you thought, ah, here we go. Ravens back on top. He was tackled by our offensive tackle around about the 1 yard line, fumbled the ball out of the end zone for a touchback. A huge sigh of relief. You could probably hear it all the way from Aberdeen, Scotland. And Washington went on, drove down the field, got a field goal, went 16-10 in the lead, and really that was it. That was the end of the scoring for the night. But those last couple of minutes, as Flacco drove the team down the pitch, it was terrible. I hate football sometimes.
Well, I have a feeling that Don may hate it right now as well. Don, I know you're at the game, and you were quite disappointed in how this went. Last week, I was pretty outspoken in how I was upset with some of the coaching decisions on the Ravens side that contributed to them giving the Raiders another win. But this one seemed like a lot of execution problems. What are you feeling right now, and who do you blame for this loss?
You and Neil hit it right on the head. I mean, it's the whole team lost. I mean, C. Smith going out in the first quarter really hurt. Our right tackle, Rick Wagner, going out in the going out the game hurts as well. But I mean, C.J. Mosley, obviously having the pick that was in our end zone, and he, tried to reach out, but he fumbled it, through the back of the end zone. It was a touchback. It was a clear call. I mean, when you have a porous run defense, you have a porous pass defense, as the Redskins are, no offense, but, I mean, you have to exploit it. And the Ravens just flat out didn't. They just didn't go deep. I mean, Terrence West had a good game as far as yardage goes, yards for carry, but just didn't do it enough. Very, very frustrating loss. I mean, just as the way I felt after last week at home, the Ravens gave it away. I mean, kudos to the Redskins. They got it done. Won a game on the road, which is not easy, as we know, in the NFL. I mean, I feel like the Ravens are frustrated on offense. They can't go deep. Say if they have like a third and six, they have a 4 yard pass route, dump route to a running back, which is it's not going to get it done. Very, very frustrated. I mean, we're 3-2 now, two games on the road in the bye week. I mean, we'll see. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, every time the Ravens lose to the Redskins, we win a Super Bowl. But I mean, both times has been in Landover, not in Baltimore. So, very, very frustrated. I mean, again, kudos to Neil. You guys had a good game. But very, very frustrated. 3-2, we'll see what happens from there.
When you mentioned the some of the sort of strange play calling and play designs, given what some of the strengths of the Baltimore Ravens are, one of the players I just have not understood why they've been using him the way they have is Mike Wallace. I mean, obviously, I mean, he led the team in catches again this week, but it's all been on basically short stuff. Like, his one thing is pretty much is being very good at those deep routes, and I just don't. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm interested in what your thoughts are on Wallace and how they're using him.
I mean, absolutely, Nick. I mean, you figure the first 2 weeks he had 3 touchdowns, but I mean, I guess their excuse is that they have Alex Lewis, their rookie left guard, playing left tackle. I guess they don't think they can bomb out deep, but I mean, obviously when they bomb out deep to Mike Wallace, it works, but. they're just, you know, 3-yard passes, 4-yard passes. Again, the running game worked, and they just, especially the second half, they went away from it. I mean, what Mike Wallace, depending on Steve Smith's injury, Mike Wallace is their primary weapon. You can't depend on Perryman to actually, you know, catch a pass that's in his hands. Pitt is good. But, I mean, sadly, depending on Steve Smith's injury, Mike Wallace is your primary weapon, and you don't bound out deep, which is his forte, which, as you can tell, Nick, is very, very frustrating to me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks a lot, guys. We got to move on to the next game, but I really appreciate you chiming in, and good luck to both of you guys next week.
Not a problem, Nick. Good game, Neil.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
This is Justin. Now we're going to talk about the New England Patriots versus the Cleveland Browns in an absolute butt-kicking, which I don't think surprises anybody. A lot of people have the Patriots near the top of their power rankings and the Browns near the bottom. This week in particular was special because it marked the return of Tom Brady, his first return to action, and it went pretty much like you would expect. Tom Brady racked up over 400 yards passing, all sorts of touchdowns, 3 touchdown passes to Martellus Bennett. This was the first time I think we saw Gronk go over 100 yards this year, so it was pretty much a return to form for the New England Patriots, which is what a lot of us expected. Now, you're not going to hear from me talk about how he was going to show the league and how, you know, these 400 yards are him getting back at Goodell. No, this is a Hall of Fame quarterback who is coming in fresh against the worst team in the league, so it would have been weird if he did not absolutely annihilate them. But, man, you have to feel for the Browns. They lost yet another quarterback. So now they're looking at actually 2 guys who in the past have competed, had backup, and in at least one case started a little bit for the Seahawks, in Charlie Whitehurst, Clipboard Jesus, and Terrell Pryor. Terrell Pryor being really a wide receiver and a pretty good one nowadays, but he's got that quarterback experience. It'll be interesting to see who starts next week. It will probably be one of those 2 people. For the Cleveland Browns, that's something like 27 different starting quarterbacks since they came back in the league in 1999. And really, they couldn't get anything going. They closed it with a late touchdown to make it just a 17-point loss, which is, I guess, a small consolation. But they were just badly outmatched. I mean, in every phase of the game, they were facing a team that was superior. For the New England Patriots, I think this is exactly what they wanted. You know, they were not going to take their foot off the gas. They wanted Tom Brady to get reps, to feel comfortable, to have some success. And boy, did he ever. In addition, it looks like the tandem of Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett could be really, really difficult for other teams to deal with, kind of going back to the heyday of Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. Chris Hogan continues some really, really strong play as well. So their wide receivers, in addition to the tight ends, could make this one of the best passing attacks in the league. You may see a little drop-off of attention to LeGarrette Blount now that there's much better weapons around him, but I still think this is a really, really good offense. And, you know, we've talked about it a little bit. That Patriots defense is for real. Yeah, they gave up 13 points, but that was mostly in kind of cushion garbage time territory. They also had an interception and a safety. It's a really, really good defense. So the Patriots are what everybody thought they were, one of the absolute best teams in the league, and the Cleveland Browns are what everybody thought they were, really, really outmatched and have one of the weakest rosters in the NFL.
We now move to the Chicago Bears losing 23-29 to the Indianapolis Colts in Indianapolis. This was a bit of a weird game, but you know, nonetheless, one in which the Colts get back a little bit closer to 500, going to 2-3 here. And Dan, so, you know, what do you think about this win? I mean, it was one which, you know, I think most people had the Colts in this one. Andrew Luck looked pretty good, but there seems to be some weaknesses that are still very apparent on this team.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's kind of funny. I started watching the game, and I said to myself, man, the Bears are bad, but it just didn't seem like the Colts were any better. And maybe that's a super fan of me being a little too optimistic, but yeah, the offensive line play was spotty again today. There were a lot of hits that went in on Andrew that he'd like to avoid, but he did pretty well moving around in the pocket and keeping his head down the field. They actually showed a slow motion replay where Andrew Luck was getting hit, and as he's going to the ground, he's still looking downfield, and you can kind of just see that disappointment on his face that he couldn't make a play out of it. But they had some bad special team decisions. We had a punt that was going to stop at the 1, and we had a guy knock it into the end zone to give the Bears a free 19 yards. So So things like that, it just seemed to keep showing up. They have late hits that keep showing up, and, you know, no one on defense is interested in tackling. So it's kind of interesting that they cut a guy last week in C.O. Moore, who I thought was one of their better tacklers. And it shows up in games like this that they don't have anyone out there to make tackles consistently, and it's a disappointment. And, you know, it all goes back to accountability. If they're going to show that they're going to cut C.O. Moore, I wonder if they're going to make any more cuts this week, especially special teams plays that could have cost them the game.
And for the Bears, obviously it's yet another losing battle for you guys. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just impressed by some of the guys that showed up that no one's ever heard of. Obviously, you know, we have Brian Hoyer still a quarterback for Chicago Bears. But you had Jordan Howard getting 118 yards on 16 carries, and Cameron Meredith getting 130 yards and a touchdown on 9 receptions. So I'm not expecting exuberance and excitement from you, Tom, but signs of, I don't know, hope?
Well, to some extent. I mean, you brought up Cameron Meredith. He had 9 catches for 130 yards, and, you know, he did have a pretty good game. He got a lot of opportunities, mostly because the Bears spent the whole game throwing away from Vontae Davis, which I totally understand. That meant that Alshon Jeffrey wasn't targeted nearly as much, but it opened up things for a lot of the other receivers. And Meredith was, I think, the primary beneficiary of that. And he did look good. He's a big receiver. He's tough to cover. Got a little bit of speed, got good hands, although he did fumble the ball for the Bears' only turnover, and it was a pretty big turnover given the fact that the Colts did a pretty good job protecting the ball this game. I thought both teams protected the ball pretty well, but that fumble did end up hurting. Zach Miller also benefited once again. He's a tight end. He had 7 catches for 73 yards, and another good game from him. You know, he basically disappeared from the offense the first 2 games when Cutler was at quarterback, and all of a sudden Brian Hoyer came in and wasn't forcing the ball to Jeffrey anymore, and it opened up a lot of targets for a lot of guys, and Miller has been he's really benefited from that. And yeah, you brought up Jordan Howard. He also did have a good game. He had one really good run for 58 yards. The rest of them were okay, but frankly, I thought he made the most of his opportunities. I mean, the offensive line struggled. You don't think about the Colts being all that powerful along the defensive line, but they pretty much dominated the Bears' offensive line in the running game the whole game. And I thought Howard made the most of what he could get to get the yards that he could get, other than that long 58-yarder. The Bears' offensive line did a pretty good job of protecting Hoyer again, but Hoyer, unlike Cutler, gets the ball out quickly, and so that makes it hard to get to him. And that helped the offense an awful lot as well. To me, for the Bears, the story of this game, I mean, to make a long story short, they are not good enough to shoot themselves in the foot all game and recover from that. I mean, they're just not going to do that. And the turnover hurt them, but the penalties really hurt them badly. They had 6 penalties for 55 yards in the first half alone, and they finished with 10 for 80, and they just can't do that. They aren't going to beat anybody doing that. And it also didn't help that they couldn't get a pass rush on Andrew Luck in the first half. They did, as Dan pointed out, get a decent rush in the second half, but it was too little too late. Luck had all kinds of time the first half while the Bears were rushing 4 and trying to play coverage. And they finally started to bring an extra guy every now and then. That really helped them, and it did seem like the defensive line did better in the second half, getting pressure on him as well. But those things really contributed to the failure. That's how you have over 500 yards of offense and you don't score. you commit penalties and you fail on third down and you fail in the red zone. And they failed in the red zone in particular a lot today. When you're settling for field goals, you know, it's going to be tough to win.
And for the Colts, you know, at 2-3, they're still very much alive in the AFC South. Obviously, you know, you have some of the big guys still making plays. Frank Gore looked good. T.Y. Hilton had himself a great day with 10 receptions for 171 and a touchdown. But, you know, this team also gave up 5 sacks and 7 quarterback hits. I mean, what is your sort of prognosis of the season there, Dan? Like, is Luck going to be able to stay healthy to a potential, you know, fight for the division or playoffs later in this year?
I sure hope so. He's being a lot smarter and taking hits when he's running the football in the pocket. A lot of his hits are coming on his body. So, well, they're still big hits, but he's a big guy too. So the hits this year, I don't think have really been overall as bad as they were last year. He's still taking a couple big shots, but yeah, it looks like Frank Gore's getting some room to run the last couple of weeks. The T.Y. Hilton, like you were saying, he's really showing up this year for him. He was battling a little bit of a knee injury early on, but he had the game-winning touchdown today and against the Chargers as well. So his speed's a real threat. And if that offensive line can give Andrew Luck enough time to look downfield, I think we'll see that connection a little more regularly. And like you said, it's the AFC South, so it's not like they're trying to knock off any juggernauts to get to the division crown. So the Texans, they're playing that first-place schedule, and they're starting to feel the – difficulty associated with that, I think, and without J.J. Watt in there, I don't know if they'll be able to survive it, and 8-8 might be good enough to win the division this year.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
We now move on to the Detroit Lions winning 24-23 over the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm here with our Eagles superfan, James. And you know, James, it ended up being a close game, and look, I mean, I think a lot of people were expecting Wentz and the Eagles to fall back to earth, but I mean, Wentz still had a solid game, and you guys nearly came back in this one. Now, what do you take away from it?
A horrible first half start. The defense didn't show up. The offense was inconsistent. They didn't take advantage of opportunities in the last drive of the first half. Too many penalties backed them out where they could have easily scored a touchdown if they had just stayed disciplined and moved the ball down the field. But for every yard they gain, they seem to move 2 yards back. Overall, Wentz played a solid game. The pick at the end, of course, you know, that's a 50-50 ball. You hope your receiver goes up and fights for that. At the very least, it's an incomplete pass, not an interception. Detroit, hats off to them. They came out early. They hit us in the mouth often. They held on late and made plays when they had to.
And so, you know, obviously, this doesn't change things too much in the division, but you have now Washington starting to creep up on you. I mean, do you feel like the slow start and some of the problems that you saw are things that are can be worked out? Or how do you feel about this season at this point?
Overall, I'm still pretty high on the season so far. Still tempered. I'm not expecting us to go out like gangbusters and, you know, win 13, 14 games or anything, but I do think anywhere between 8-10 is still reasonable at this point. It's a half game lead in the division right now over Washington, who did win today against the Ravens. But there'll be a tough test because it will be Wentz's first game in division next week in Washington. So right now, like I said, he's still playing well. First interception thrown, got that out the way. We can stop to talk about, you know, his wonderful passing skills and, you know, him not throwing an interception yet. All that talk can end now. You can focus on running the offense. You know, they still open up everything to him. He's allowed to make calls at the line of scrimmage. Washington will be a tough test defensively for what they present, because division matchups are harder than, you know, any other matchup that he'll have. I think the game today pretty much did open up a lot as far as, you know, what he saw downfield and the throws that he was able to make. The receiving core does still need to step up. There are a couple of passes that Aguilar, Nelson pretty much had in the grasp. There was a touchdown pass dropped by Green Beckham in the third quarter that ended up being a field goal. So those type of little things have to be cleaned up in the next week, because in Washington, we're not going to have that many opportunities to pretty much just drive down the field, especially being down 21-10 at halftime to come back like that. So we fall in the same hole like we did this week. Next week, it's not going to be pretty against Washington.
And what did you see from the Lions? You know, they've really set off some fireworks these last couple of weeks. I've been a Detroit doubter for, you know, basically the whole offseason. Am I wrong? Is this team legit?
I don't know if they're legit yet, but give them credit. They did come out. They punched Philly in the mouth early and often. The three drives they had in the first half all resulted in touchdowns. Kept them off balance. They were very physical up front at the point of attack on the line of scrimmage. The offensive line completely dominated our defensive line in the first half. They were able to pop off 6, 7, 8 yard runs at will when necessary just to keep us off balance. We couldn't get into any rhythm defensively as far as, you know, just rushing four. We had to commit extra people to the run. When that happened, Stafford was able to hit people downfield in one-on-one coverage who basically were just running away from my defenders, crossing routes, you know, wide receivers on linebackers, just completely out of sync defensively in the first half. But I think scoring at the end of the first half and scoring again in the beginning of to start the second half pretty much put Detroit on its heels a little bit. Aside from that Ryan Matthews turnover that set them up for the game-winning field goal, the game pretty much turned at that point from those two drives, last drive of the first half, first drive of the second half. And, you know, Detroit was reeling. They couldn't really do much in the second half. I believe the total yards were like 50 yards in the second half after gaining almost 200 in the first. So they did what they had to do. They kept us off balance. And I think teams will pay attention to that when they face Philadelphia down the road, that if they're able to, you know, pound us with the run and get successful carries, not 1 and 2 yard runs, but actually 5, 6, 7 yard runs at a time to force us to commit extra defenders in the box so they can throw the ball, you know, and spread the field out. That'll get us off balance early and often, because the Jim Schwartz defense, he really only wants to rush four on passing downs, hoping that his linebackers will fill the gaps on run plays and, you know, put stops to those things and, you know, just play tight coverage in the secondary. But when you give up running plays at a clip like that, it's pretty hard to play solid defense.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot, James.
Thank you.
All right, we now move on to the Tennessee Titans' 30-17 road win over the Miami Dolphins. I'm joined by a very unhappy Dolphins superfan here. It's Andy, our newest superfan. And so, Andy, you know, you're calling us from the sidelines of a wedding, and it seems like this was not a happy watching experience here in terms of your Dolphins.
So you called me unhappy just a moment ago, and, you know, frankly, unhappy is in the eye of the beholder. You know, will I be unhappy, you know, turn the clock forward 5 months from now when we draft Deshaun Watson 6th overall and this loss helped us do exactly that? I probably won't be that unhappy at that point. I mean, listen, I picked the Dolphins to win today. Anyone who's read things that I've posted on Twitter knows that. But I picked them to win an ugly, you know, 24-17 game. I knew that we weren't going to blow the Titans out. And, you know, one thing, to be honest, that really bothered me about Dolphins Twitter in the week leading up to this contest was so many, you know, pompous Miami fanboys were just thumbing their nose at the Tennessee Titans. You know, oh, of course we're going to beat the Titans. They're the Titans. Oh, of course we're going to beat the Titans. We're at home. No. We're not that good. The Dolphins at this point are nowhere near good enough to thumb their nose at anybody. I don't care if it's the Titans. I don't care if it's the Browns, who, by the way, we should have lost to 3 weeks ago. They missed 3 different field goals. You know, we're just not very good at this point. And, you know, going forward, I'm a firm believer that instability at the head coach position, that's the type of thing that keeps bad franchises bad, right? You know, firing your head coach every 2 years, that's what the Browns do. That's the type of thing that keeps teams bad. At the same time, though, if we finish 3-13, like I think we're going to, frankly, I have no problem firing Adam Gase. He has done nothing this year to lead me to believe that he is a competent NFL head coach. And I think the entire team needs to be washed. New head coach, new coordinators, new quarterback. Hopefully we're going to get a new owner. Old man Ross should probably sell the team. He won't. He won't sell the team until he keels over and dies, and his family has to do it for him, unfortunately. But, I mean, it's really ugly. It's really, really ugly. And, you know, as much as the Lions and the Browns get all the credit for being tortured fan bases, if you're a millennial Dolphins fan under the age of 30, you're simply not old enough to remember this franchise being good for an extended period of time. So I'd love to get people's condolences, but I don't get enough of them. I just have to feel sorry for myself. And that's kind of the way it works around here. But did you watch the game? What do you think?
No, I didn't. I wasn't able to catch this game. I was sort of just keeping an eye on it out of the corner of my eye. I mean, the only thing that I feel like, you know, maybe it's some sort of encouraging. You know, Kiko Alonso had a lot of tackles. He seemed to be flying around, and Devontae Parker had a couple of big catches, and we've been sort of waiting to see something big out of him. I mean, are there any performances on your side that sort of stand out and give you encouragement?
Sure. So, definitely glad you brought up both those players. Kiko Alonso is not going to be on the team next year, and here's why. As a 2013 draft pick, this is the last year of his rookie deal, and if he plays really poorly, he's not going to be on the team next year because we won't want to retain him. If he plays really well, like he did today, all things considered, he's not going to be on the team next year because we won't want to give him the money that he'll probably get. So Kiko Alonso, whatever he does for the next 11 games, it's all gravy. It doesn't really matter. He's not going to be here next year. Devontae Parker is a guy who's very interesting to me. Obviously, he can play, right? You know, he is an A.J. Green light type of guy. Problem is, he's a crumble foot, right? He just gets hurt. He's never 100% healthy. Wasn't 100% healthy today. But between Devontae Parker, Jarvis Landry, Jay Ajayi, who played pretty well today other than a 15-yard personal foul, you know, the cupboard is far from bare. And that's one thing that I think you could look at positively if you're a Dolphins fan is the next quarterback, our week one starter, 2017, Lord hopes it's not Ryan Tannehill. But assuming it's not, which it probably won't be, our week one quarterback next year has far from a bare cover to work with. Parker, Ajayi, Landry, the offensive line is, you know, all things considered pretty good when healthy. So, you know, I do think the ramp-up period for the next quarterback will be a shorter learning curve or a less steep learning curve than it otherwise would be.
And if you're a Titans fan looking at this, I mean, are you jumping for joy? I mean, it seems like Marcus Mariota had himself a good game and their running game is working behind DeMarco Murray. Do you think that there's a chance that the Titans are going to be, you know, able to really make some noise this year?
No, not really. I mean, Mariota's game today is a perfect example of how flawed the passer rating metric is. You know, just by virtue of the fact that if you throw three touchdowns and don't throw a pick, your passer rating is going to be in the triple digits. Fact of the matter is, the kid threw the ball 29 times, and on those 29 pass attempts, only came up with 167 passing yards against what will ultimately be a bottom five defense. He played fine. He wasn't great. You know, the running game was really good. I mean, DeMarco Murray and Henry are both very good backs. At the end of the day, the Dolphins have a bottom five defense. And, yeah, I mean, the Titans, you won this game. You'll probably go 6-10. Whoop-de-doo, good for you. Your division's awful, so you'll probably be in it until the final week of the season. But that's also – but I don't think the Titans necessarily played that well.
All right, good stuff, man. Thanks. I really appreciate you calling in from the wedding, and go back out there and boogie.
Yep. See you later, man.
Thanks. Cheers. And next up is the Minnesota Vikings 31-13 win at home over the Houston Texans. And I'm going to toss it to the victor first here, Davey. This Minnesota team just keeps looking solid. You're now at 5-0. What did you take away from this particular latest win, this latest pelt on your wall here? And how are you feeling?
Well, it's hard not to feel pretty good. I think what I take away most is that we continue to lose people, and I don't notice any change in the team. This week's biggest loss was Stephon Diggs, and Thielen just stepped right in and had a monster game. And anybody in Minnesota knows Thielen is kind of the local kid that has gone from special teams monster to being the number one threat this week, so that's pretty great. And, you know, from where I sit, it's pretty exciting to see all these injuries kind of stack up and have none of us see any sort of meaningful impact. So that's pretty awesome. I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway from my end this week. Other than watching another kind of huge victory, it's hard to get your hopes up as a Vikings fan because we've seen how that story ends about 100 times.
Yeah, and for you... You know, on the Houston side of things here, James, what do you? It seems like a lot of the reaction to this game is criticism towards Brock Osweiler. I watched most of this game, and it's true. I mean, he was straight up inaccurate on a lot of his passes. How are you feeling about the team in the wake of this loss?
Well, I mean, the performance by Brock was obviously disappointing. It's several in a row. I'm taking a little less stock in this one because Minnesota has shut down Aaron Rodgers. They've shut down, you know, good quarterbacks this whole season. I'm not saying Brock is among their ranks, but they're going to make an average to below average quarterback look kind of like what Brock looks like today. It was okay to see the garbage time touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins. They were obviously just force feeding the ball deep basically once the second half started. You know, when you're just running those deep routes, you're going to have some bad passes. That doesn't excuse the first half performance at all. But this was walking into a buzzsaw.
And it also, I mean, obviously, you know, Houston got down early, but they got totally away from the running game with just 14 carries on the day. And Brock Osweiler was obviously not being very efficient. He finished 19 of 42, so therefore less than 50% passing. For a touchdown and interception. Did the game plan worry you, or you just feel like, you know, they sort of just got so far behind the eight ball that they did what they had to?
I think they threw up the white flag about halfway through the third quarter. I mean, there were, to start the second half, I believe there were three straight drives where it was just all passes. There might have been one run by Lamar Miller. And then they take Lamar Miller out of the game. They put in Alfred Blue, Alfred Blue had some okay looking stats, mostly because at that point Minnesota was, you know, just playing too deep. And yeah, sure, if you guys want to run out the clock yourself, you're more than happy, you know, we're more than happy to let you do that. I think they may have learned a lesson from the Miami game last year where the game got out of hand and they left Foster in, and Foster tore his Achilles. So, you know, take the people out that you don't want to risk some injury to.
And to you, Davey, I just can't have both of you on the air without bringing this up. There has been a long-running argument going on off the air for Next Fan Up listeners between these two about the wisdom of the trade for Sam Bradford. Bradford, by the way, went 22 of 30 for 271 yards and two touchdowns, no interceptions. And so, Davey, since we have James here, any more points you'd like to add in your thoughts on the wisdom of that trade?
I figured you'd want to bring that up. Well, in all seriousness, it's hard to, as a Vikings fan, to not be happy about the trade through this the first 5 weeks. You know, still a lot of season left, and you know, for giving up a first round pick, I understand the sentiment of it being too much. But having said that, I'm not sure what else he can do to make it look like a pretty good trade this far.
And your rebuttal, James.
So, and it wasn't just me. When the trade occurred, you know, 8 days before the season started, the big critique was the process behind the trade. You know, at the time, you're trading for Sam Bradford, who has a career quarterback rating lower than Sean Hill. It would not be out of the question to say he's injury prone. You know, you're basically giving up a first-round pick for the difference between Sean Hill and Sam Bradford. And, you know, that's a very steep price to pay when your team is clearly built on your defense. You know, you won the first two games with Adrian Peterson averaging less than 2 yards a carry. I don't think Jerick McKinnon looked particularly great today, which is troubling given how porous the Houston run defense is. But the underlying principle was the process was flawed if you think that you have to go out and spend a first and then I think a first and a third the following year to go out and get Sam Bradford when there were other options available that on paper don't look that different than Sam Bradford.
I think the back and forth has mostly been that I just don't know quite what those other options realistically are that look so much better when those are sort of people sort of guessing what the other options might have been. And I sort of have gone back and forth with a lot of times basically saying it seems that a lot of people are guessing what other options are, and when a GM has to actually make that call, I'm not exactly sure that we can actually guess appropriately and know that Spielman had a better option than Sam Bradford. And from I understand your point that it, you know, the trade logic looked flawed from where you sit, you know, looking at the, you know, quarterback rating versus Sean Hill or something, but taking age into account also has a lot to do with that. Sean Hill's like 40.
Well, Sam Bradford's an old seventh year into the league, having sat two of them out already.
Yeah, you could also say that that keeps his arm young. His knees, maybe not so much. I totally hear the injury-prone argument. With our, you know, tire fire of an offensive line, I'm equally as concerned that he's not going to make it through the year. So I certainly get the logic that you lose your starting quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater and you bring in a guy who, you know, is made of glass historically so far through his season, so or through his career. So I totally get that. But, you know, so far through the trade, I think it's looking pretty good.
Sam Bradford did take some big hits in this game. Only two sacks, but he was, I mean,
he got rocked.
The contact, yeah, that he took, it was major hits. Osweiler did too, and we're running out of time, but just to way oversimplify everything, I want each of you to say which of these two quarterbacks is better, Brock or Sam.
Well, I think Brock is pretty much, not even starting caliber, so I'll still take Sam.
Well, when healthy, and, you know, for the first five games, Bradford has been the better quarterback.
All right, we will leave it there. I'm sure this is going to be a conversation that will continue, maybe not on the air as much, but I appreciate both of you guys being on. Thanks.
Can I have one quick Sitco throwback? This is
yes.
The second game that we've already allowed a punt return touchdown, and I think you'll fairly say that there should have been three punt return touchdowns that the Houston Texans have allowed. So.
Yeah, good point. Can't win without special teams.
Can't win without it.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Nick.
We now move to the Pittsburgh Steelers in their 31-13 win over the New York Jets. And I'm going to go to the home and winning team first here. Greg, you know, there's been a lot of, there's been a fair amount of angst by both fantasy owners and football watchers about Sammy Coates. Sammy Coates turned in, you know, quite a performance here with six receptions for 139 yards and two touchdowns. But it was the full Sammy Coates experience, as I heard Andrew say off the air here. Tell us about this win and how you're feeling with the Steelers now, 4-1.
I'm feeling pretty good right now. Steelers are pretty much decimated with injuries. They had actually, heading into that game, I believe it was nine guys that were ruled out, and they ended up putting two of those guys on the IR, including Ryan Harris. So the fact that we are missing our starting right tackle, Gilbert, is one of the better tackles in the league, and his backup, the swing tackle, Ryan Harris, and we started some slob named Hubbard out there, and we actually got a win. I'm pretty happy. So, and with Big Sammy, you know, he did have 11 targets, did have six catches with a big yardage and two touchdowns, did drop a third touchdown, and had, I guess, four or five other drops. So the full experience, like you said.
And for you, Andrew, again, joining us from the back of an Uber, everyone looked at, not everybody, but Pod in particular was always bringing this up, and we talked a fair amount about it, that the Jets had this extremely difficult opening schedule. The Jets now fall to 1-4. What does this game mean for your season, and how did you go about losing this?
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound like a typical Jets fan, but, like, literally just end the season already. Like, you know, like the whole – the acronym, JETS, just end the season, blah, 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 you know, hilarious. But, like, this game, the score of this game didn't really indicate how close the game was. Todd Bowles really is the story of this game. And I don't like making the story about the coach because I think it's an easy cop-out. But there are so many things that you could point to. There were a couple of 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1. First of all, the 3rd-and-1 play calls where the Jets just insist on going on shotgun with empty backfields just continue to baffle me. But like, let's even go to like the 4th-and-1 calls. The first drive of the game, the Jets had a 4th-and-1 on Pittsburgh's like 14-13 yard line, and they kicked the field goal. And yeah, you could make the argument, you take the point. I don't agree with that, especially when you're playing a team like Pittsburgh, who is a perfect it's a perfect contrast, because Pittsburgh had attempted a fake field goal, and yes, I didn't think it was a good decision and they missed it, but like it just goes to show the complete different philosophies of these two coaches. Mike Tomlin goes for it and he believes in his team. Todd Bowles punts down 11 from midfield with 7 minutes left on 4th-and-2. So and then there were other plays in this game, other opportunities where Todd Bowles had an opportunity to show how conservative he was, and he lived up to the task, because It was unbelievable on the amount of fourth and shorts that he was punting away. And in terms of also coaching, another issue, the most predictable play this whole week, the entire week of the NFL, the entire week we were saying Pittsburgh is the best big play offense in football, and the Jets are the worst big play defense in football. So Sammy Coates is going to have a big touchdown. Literally, the third offensive play of the game for Pittsburgh on a 3rd and 7, Sammy Coates is left in single coverage against Marcus Williams and runs right by him for a 78-yard touchdown. Right? And then the Jets can't get pressure the whole game. And as Greg said, they're playing with some slob named Hubbard at right tackle, which I found funny. I don't know why you called him a slob, but he actually played pretty well considering like the Jets couldn't manufacture any pressure on Roethlisberger. And remember, this is a Jets team whose strength is supposed to be the defensive line. And the defensive line didn't play awful. Leonard Williams played well. Sheldon Richardson played well. But the back seven is just atrocious right now. And Todd Bowles will still come in and bring that Arizona defense, that scheme with him, scheme up some pressure, and he's just unable to. And the players aren't making plays. The defense isn't making any plays. Fitzpatrick didn't have a bad game. He didn't turn the ball over. He threw a couple of good balls to Marshall, who played well but had a couple of big drops again, which is the Brandon Marshall game. And back to your question, yeah, they're 1-4. They're at home against Arizona on Monday Night Football coming up. After these next two games against Arizona and Baltimore, they have the easiest schedule in football, but it's going to be too late, and it's just going to end up in a typical Jets season where they're not going to be good enough to make the playoffs, but they'll be good enough to not put themselves in position to draft a Deshaun Watson or Deshaun Kizer, and then we're going to be stuck with Christian Hackenberg or, God knows, Ryan Fitzpatrick again next year.
Who knows? Maybe you'll pull the Chiefs and go 1-5 and then go 10-0 all the way into the playoffs and then do nothing there and look bad to start the next season.
One can only hope.
And so for you, Greg, you've been on the Steelers in the Super Bowl train since basically last season ended, since maybe the regular season last year ended. You're now 4-1. You've seen the team, look pretty good here. I mean, are you confident that you've exercised the ghost of that Eagles loss? Or how are you feeling about the season overall here?
I'm feeling pretty good. I thought since the preseason when they had so many question marks with Ladarius Green and Bud Dupree on IR that this Steeler defense was going to take even a little bit longer than some were thinking to gel. And I don't think they're there yet. I think we're staying afloat. I know we won big today and big last week, but the defense isn't up to par yet. They're playing better each week, and they're going to be getting these guys back. And they have a lot of injuries right now, as in, I think both starting outside linebackers have actually hurt. So, and these guys are going to be coming back to the team. So I think this is going to be a better team in week 9 than they are now. And the fact that we're getting wins right now is great, but it's also a factor of Ben being 100% healthy right now. Again, he threw for 4 touchdowns today. I guess that's 9 in the last 2 weeks. He's cooking. So pretty much the defense means nothing at the moment. But that's good because we need that to get healthy.
And for the Jets, Andrew, I mean, would you rather them, try to save this season and claw back some wins? Or are you on the total, all about 2017 train now?
Well, I would be about all 2017 if I knew that that's what the goal was. But this is a veteran team with a bunch of guys who want to win, and they're going to win because, as I mentioned before, after the Baltimore game, just for a reference, they're playing, I think, Cleveland, Miami, and the Rams for the next 3 games after that, which is why I was saying first 6, they needed to go 3-3. If they went 3-3, they should have made the playoffs. And now they have Arizona and Baltimore. And yeah, I mean, you can make the argument if they win the next 2 games, they're right back in it. I don't think they will win those next 2 games, and I think that's just Jets fans kidding themselves because this team has just way too many holes. But to answer your question, I would rather lose a bunch of games this year and get the quarterback that we haven't had in God knows how long since I've been alive or since Chad Pennington was healthy. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So yeah, I hope we go 1-15. But
not going to happen.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks, Nick. And just so my Uber driver was nodding to everything I was saying.
We now move to the Atlanta Falcons' win over the Denver Broncos, giving the Broncos their first loss at home, 23-16. This was not for those that did think that the Falcons were, you know, going to win this one. I picked it in Pick'em. It was one of my few correct picks this week. I don't think anyone thought that it was going to be this way. I think most people figured that if Falcons were going to go into Denver and win the day, it was going to be through a shootout. But this was a fairly defensive-heavy affair, which I imagine Tim, our Falcons superfan here, has got to be pretty encouraged by, that this defense, you know, really showed up for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our defense was playing out of their minds, especially when you like sit back and you consider like we're down four linebackers. So, you know, Kamal Ishmael was, you know, the middle linebacker today and was the one calling the plays in the huddle for the defense. And he's traditionally our backup safety. So on the whole, a, you know, fantastic defensive effort, six sacks today. So, I mean, we had more sacks today than we had coming in, and Vic Beasley with 3.5 himself, and just an all around beatdown. And I mean, I try not to come in here and be crazy, but I mean, this game was way worse than 23-16. You know, I mean, Denver got what, 10 points in the last 2 minutes, but I mean, that was pure garbage time, definition of garbage time. And the Falcons were just like, go ahead, we'll let you score, but you're just going to run out all of the clock while you do it. And that's what you want to do, then go for it.
And Lewis, our Denver super fan, is also on the line with us. And Lewis, you know, this was basically the first full dress rehearsal for Paxton Lynch in an NFL game that was game planned due to the injury to Trevor Siemian. He seemed to have a fairly up and down day. He ended up with okay stats, but I think, you know, you're probably worried and looking forward to having Trevor come back.
I mean, the big difference between Trevor and Paxton is just Trevor is able to recognize the coverage is better. He's able to get the ball out much faster. I think Paxton held onto the ball way too long. I mean, our offensive line played hard. I believe Vic Beasley had an amazing game. They tried to put Sombrello at right tackle because of the injury to Donald Stevenson. He was having troubles. They switched it to Schofield. He was having troubles, but hats off to Atlanta. They played an amazing game. They were able to get their running backs in space with Tevin Coleman having 130 yards receiving. Devontae Freeman also had an excellent game. And I agree with Tim. The final score didn't really dictate how close this game was. And Atlanta just played a much, much better game.
And for you, Tim, you know, there's been, I think there was a lot of negativity towards the Falcons over the offseason. And one of their biggest free agent signings was Mohamed Sanu. He only came away with 3 catches, but it seems like every single one of those was like a circus trick in this. Obviously, Mac has been a great addition to the offensive line. Are you now, in terms of your own, this, you know, I guess, expectations of your team, are you shooting higher now? Do you think this team's going to really do some things this year?
I mean, we started 5-0 last year, went, you know, got to 6-1, and then we lost so many to finish 8-8. So, you know, I'm still hesitant. You know, it's nice that 3 of our wins have come on the road. I mean, we've won at Oakland, at New Orleans, at Denver now, Carolina at home. Our only loss was a close loss to Tampa Bay. Like, we could be up there with Minnesota as one of the only undefeated teams, but, you know, we had that miscue early. Now, as far as Mohamed Sanu, a little bit of a disappointment today. You know, even though he had some good catches, he did fumble the ball, or, I mean, TJ Ward just took it from him. And, you know, he had a ball that he could have caught at the goal line, you know, to give us a first down really, really late to where, you know, we could have put it away with another Devontae Freeman or Tevin Coleman touchdown, but the ball ended up touching the ground. So, you know, the jury's still out there for Sanu with me, and I don't love him. Yeah, he had a better statistical game than Julio Jones, but Julio did a great job taking away coverage from everybody else so that Matt could pick apart, you know, who he actually wanted to throw to, you know. And I'm looking what Matt had, 7 different receivers today. So I think that's actually, you know, a season low for him with only having 7. You know, 3-9, Aldrick Robinson and Levine Toilolo didn't get their catches, but I mean, I'm very happy with where this team is. Our offensive line looks great, but I'm still a little hesitant. If I was doing power rankings, I know I'm supposed to. Greg will yell at me for never putting them in. But, you know, I'd have us in the top three, top five for the time being, especially with the defense showing up today. But I'm still very, very hesitant moving forward.
And for you, Lewis, the Broncos were put at the very top of, I think, a lot of people's power rankings. And it's sort of been the conversation around the Broncos throughout this offseason and early this season that this defense is just so good that you can plug in a basic quarterback and win games. And in this game, the Broncos basically took away Julio Jones. He had two catches for 29 yards. They did a lot right, but the offense still wasn't doing enough. Are you concerned with what this game shows about the structure of the team, or is just just figured we're gonna lose one eventually and we move on?
No, I mean, listen. I think what's a problem with this defense so far is the beginning of drives, usually in the first quarter, usually the first drive of the opponents. Teams are able to drive down the field, score some points, get off to early leads. The way for our defense to be successful is to give our pass rushers ability to pass rush, and we have to build a lead. If teams are able to run and get into third and manageable, that's not when our defense could be most effective. So it's important to start off with leads. I think every game this year we were kind of down, I think, to start off the game. So it's really important to get up to a lead, let our defense do its best with the pass rushing, and go on from there.
All right. Well, great stuff. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
That sounds good.
And we now move to the Bills' 30-19 win over the Los Angeles Rams in Los Angeles. LeSean McCoy had himself an amazing day with 18 carries for 150 yards. That included one particularly long run for 53. And I'm here with Robert, our Bills super fan, to give us the breakdown. Another good win for you guys. How are you feeling?
Three in a row, and it's about to be five in a row, because the next two games are fairly easy games. The Bills are becoming relevant, and it's the first time in a long time that I could say that with confidence. So very happy, not going to lie. It was a great game to watch today. I was pretty worried about them going to the West Coast. They played a team what they do offensively is a little bit of usually a problem for the Bills, because players like Kayvon Austin and Mike Quick, they have usually tons of problems with, and they did have little problems with throughout the game, but they held their own. Defense played pretty well, did get a pick six throughout the game, and ended up getting an 11-point win out on the West Coast. It was great.
And you're now just one game back in the division, surprisingly. Granted, the Bills have had some heartbreaker seasons in the past, but do you feel like, based on what you've seen so far, this is a team that's going places?
This is a team that could potentially legitimately make the playoffs. I'm not going to sit here and say, regardless of what happened last week in New England, obviously Tom Brady wasn't at the helm. I'm not going to sit here and say they should win the division. I don't think they will. I think New England will still win the division. That being said, I think that the Bills could easily finish 10-6 or 11-5 and very easily, sneak into the playoffs.
And, maybe it's just the scheme, and obviously it was working, but it was not a particularly efficient or productive day for Tyrod Taylor. There wasn't a whole, at least not as much going on in the passing game, with him just going for 12 of 23 for 124 yards. Did have two touchdowns and no interceptions. What do you make of sort of the game plans of these last couple of wins and how they're figuring out how to come away with these ones?
I think that the offensive scheme is just going to be predicated on running the ball like it was today. If that's not there, the presumption is that there's going to be holes for Tyrod to kind of do his thing. He had a couple nice runs. I know there was a 3rd-and-19 that he went, got 22 yards off his feet. He's not going to put up Peyton Manning numbers. He's not going to put up, Tom Brady numbers. But in the offense that they're running, he's doing what he needs to do to get the win. So So that's really kind of all you can ask for. He's not a top five quarterback, but, you know, he's not a bottom five, bottom 10 quarterback. He's, you know, he's pretty decent, and he does what he needs to do to get the job done. And the past 3 weeks, it's worked.
Well, it seems like that your secondary is also coming back. I mean, it ended up being a rough game for Case Keenum and the Rams. And what sort of, from your vantage point, what can be taken away from the Rams side of this?
As far as the Rams, I think that, you know, I mean, Todd Gurley, I think, played well. Their offensive line probably needs a little bit of work, but he's a beast. That being said, you know, whenever they decide to pull the trigger on Goff and get him kind of in, if they just had a little bit of an upgraded quarterback, I think this would be a real, you know, interesting team because they have a good defense. You know, I mean, let's see what's up with the injury with Jenkins, but they have a legitimate, you know, top 10 defense. They have pieces there. Their offense, you know, they got the big running back, but they also have Kayvon Austin, who can do, you know, kind of some interesting things, as well as Mike Quick.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks a lot, man. And congratulations on the win.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Talk to you next week. And it's time now to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals' 14-28 loss to the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. And don't let this score fool you. Although Dallas still doubled the Bengals' points, I mean, this was even more lopsided than the score would indicate. It was 28-0, fairly deep into the third quarter. And, you know, these guys, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, it's not news, but these guys appear to be the real deal. Still running. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott especially, he went for just 15 carries. He took 134 yards for two touchdowns, including a 60-yard touchdown. Dak Prescott had another efficient day, 18 of 24 for 227 yards and a touchdown. Meanwhile, for the Bengals, obviously, you know, there's two big questions here. A, where was the defense? The vaunted defense that allowed the Cowboys to go up so fast and so big. But even where was the offense? Granted, they had a missed field goal, which, you know, which eliminated some points and some, honestly, some offensive production for them. Still, nonetheless, Andy Dalton was more or less efficient, but just was not connecting on the deep passes outside of, you know, honestly, a 22-yarder to A.J. Green was the longest play of the day for the Cincinnati Bengals. And on Dallas' side, the flip side of that is that I think a lot of people are going to be surprised at just how well this defense can play when Sean Lee is healthy. Sean Lee, their star linebacker, he finished with 10 total tackles. They also got 4 sacks on the day, 9 QB hits. It was a genuinely strange game to watch, given that Cincinnati has the reputation of being the tougher, more physical team, but it was really the Cowboys pushing guys around on both sides of the ball. So, again, no surprise that Zeke and Dak are the, you know, the new stars of America's team. But watch out. This Dallas Cowboys team, now 4-1, leading the division, this is going to be a team to watch. And I'm sure you know, the nationwide fans of this team are pretty excited about it. We now move to Ken, our San Diego Chargers superfan, talking about his yet again fourth quarter collapse, this time 31-34 against the Oakland Raiders in Oakland. And Ken, I feel for you, man. It's now been, it's basically been, except for the Jaguars game, it's been a season of looking very good and totally falling apart at the very end of games to give it up. I know that you are directing your anger towards the coaching staff, but you know, just, I mean, do you have any? what are your takeaways here?
I wish that I could give you a lot of analysis about this game, about the Chargers in general, about our two Ohio State rookies who've been playing really well on defense. about how Rivers has been absolutely dealing. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the first three quarters meant. It's in the fourth quarter. The Chargers are winning. Put all your money on the other team winning. And it literally doesn't matter because the other team will beat the Chargers no matter what. I don't care what the score is. I don't care about anything. This team is honestly cursed. I at this point, I don't know what else to say other than they are cursed because they look really good for like 55 minutes. In the last 5 minutes, honestly, a high school team could come in and run the ball through. Honestly, we should start taking a knee with the last 5 minutes in every single game because – I mean, that didn't apply to this game particularly, but, you know, it's unreal. It's unreal.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it is truly uncanny how much this team can just give up good losses and with good performances. Like, as usual, Phillip Rivers had himself a game. He went 21 of 30 for almost 360 yards, went 359, four touchdowns, two interceptions. You also mentioned Joey Bosa. He had two sacks in this game after, you know, really, quite frankly, not very much practice and prep getting him to this point with his training camp holdout and all of that. And yet, it just doesn't translate into wins. So Bosa comes away with two sacks here on very little preparation due to his training camp holdout and all that contract situation. I'm not sure if I've ever gotten your full thoughts on Bosa and the team, Ken. So given that this is unfortunately another game you'd like to forget, let's talk about Bosa a bit. You know, what do you think about the situation leading up to him now and how excited are you about him as a player?
Well, had we won this game, I would have been super duper excited to tell you about how Bosa looked in this game. But now, since we've lost and you've asked me, Bosa actually looked awesome. I was texting a bunch of my buddies, and we were all just like, wow, why is Bosa not in on every single down? Because he is getting pressure. He is stout against the run. He is as advertised. And, you know, those texts actually sprung a different discussion about all the young guys we have on defense. Our defense looked really good at many points during this game. And it's unfortunate that it didn't result in a win, but honestly, I think Bosa by the end of this year could actually win Defensive Rookie of the Year just because he looked awesome today. And it's not like those two sacks were fluky. Those were legitimate NFL sacks that one of them, he had a lot of help, but he's going to be a star in this league, I think. You know, hopefully this game is not a fluke because he really did look good.
And Monty, our Oakland Raiders superfan, unfortunately couldn't be with us as he was, and I quote, up to his eyeballs in toddlers. But, you know, give us what impressions you had from the Raiders in this game. They now move, are virtually tied with Denver at the top of the division at 4-1. Which is not good for me either and my Chiefs. What do you think of them as a team? Are they going to be a real threat to take this division?
So I'm obviously very biased and very salty coming off a loss, but I didn't think the Raiders looked very impressive on defense at all. In fact, I thought they looked horrible, and I think their defense is pretty bad. Khalil Mack had a sack in this game, but we got to temper the discussions on him being the next defensive superstar in this league because he's no Von Miller. On offense, I thought they looked competent. Their offensive line actually didn't do that well against the Chargers, which is interesting. I don't know whether they're bad or we're good. The wideouts are awesome, though. And Derek Carr, for a young quarterback, looks pretty competent. However, as a whole, I don't think the Raiders are very good, and I think this game says a lot more about the Chargers than it does the Raiders.
Great. Well, sorry, man. I normally am fake sorry because we're division rivals, but at this point, I'm legitimately concerned about what this team is doing to you.
Sorry, man. Next week, after we lose to the Broncos, I will be switching my focus from the Chargers-centric to fantasy-centric. So. We'll see you next week, Nick.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
I am here with Sam, the Giants superfan. Sam, your team went into Lambeau, a place that you guys have actually had some success in the playoffs over the last decade or so. Things did not end up going your way at 23-16 Green Bay Packers victory. So what happened here?
You know, I think that the Giants coaching staff has to take the blame for this one. It was an extremely basic plan on offense that really wasn't working. Defense was okay, you know, only giving up 23 points to the Packers on the road. That's a number you're usually happy with. But I think that this offense needs a retooling at the very least.
So a little past a quarter of the way through the season, new head coach Ben McAdoo. Sounds like you're not totally sold on the job he's doing so far.
Yeah, I'm just a little confused. You know, like I was talking about with our super fan Brian from Green Bay on, you know, last week, that Ben McAdoo and Mike McCarthy created a system around their star player who was a quarterback. And it seems like that's what McAdoo was trying to do in New York. But his star players are his wide receivers, and he doesn't seem to be putting them in positions to succeed very often. And I think now it's a change for this team to be good. I think they're going to have to be a lot more aligned on Odell, you know, forcing him the ball. They did not do a great job of that today. And Sterling Shepard and Victor Cruz were almost invisible. So, you know, those are the three guys that are going to be carrying this team, and they just haven't done a great job of getting the ball in their hands.
Yeah, let's talk about Odell a little bit. He's been kind of a lightning rod lately. So tell us a little bit about how Odell's game went today.
You know, he had a great touchdown catch at the end of the game. He was catching things thrown his way. He looked open. There was a big overthrow by Eli. But, you know, in terms of antics and his emotions, he was the best he's ever been. He jokingly went over and kissed the net. I just think he's over it, you know, the immaturity and all those antics. And I think we're going to see a more focused, better Odell. I don't think he's doing anything wrong. I just don't think they're getting him the ball enough, and I don't think they're realizing that, you know, forcing, when you have a star wide receiver like that, you have to force him the ball sometimes, even if it may not look like he's wide open.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Odell Beckham's kind of shown that he can, you know, even when he's not open, a lot of the times he's open.
Yeah, even his touchdown catch today, I mean, he caught it with his left heel hovering over the out of bounds, and he just makes plays, and, you know, you can't target him. I mean, 12 times isn't so bad, but a lot of those targets were, you know, Eli running for his life and just tossing it to him. I don't think those were, you know, real targets. But I don't know. When you have weapons like that, you got to use them, and the Giants aren't doing that right now.
All right. Let's turn to you, Brian. We got Samuel's thoughts on the game. How do you feel about how this game went?
I think I need to start rethinking what normal might be for Green Bay. I think we've seen several times this year, I think we're through four games, the offense has not really sustained the level of success that I think most Packer fans are expecting. But on the other hand, the defense has played lights out through four games, with exception of you know, a game against Minnesota and one receiver for the Lions. So I'm sort of starting to think that maybe we need to just change our expectations in terms of what success looks like for Green Bay.
So speaking of that offense, it seemed to be a very kind of up and down performance in that battle between that Giants defensive line and the offensive line of Green Bay. I saw a couple of plays where it looked like Aaron Rodgers had literally all day just to sit back there and find an open man. But there were some other times where the pressure got home. So kind of review that offensive line's performance against a pretty stout defensive line.
I thought it was really strong, actually. If you listen to the announcers, they went on and on and on about the offensive line. It was like their offensive line wet dream is what it sounded like to me. I thought they played really well against a really good defensive front. I think it didn't really surprise me that they played well, because I think the Packers' offensive line has been underrated for quite a while. Even without Josh Sitton, I think Lane Taylor has stepped in and played really well. Can't really notice him too much outside of that game against the Vikings, which that's also another good defensive front. So I thought they played a great game. Rodgers was able to stand back there and take his time to eventually find an open receiver. We weren't really getting open again with any sort of consistency. But I think when you saw the ball come out on time and on rhythm, you could see that the offense could move the ball effectively. It's kind of when plays broke down and Rodgers had to stand back there and wait and wait and wait. Luckily, he had time, but there were stretches of that game where the wide receivers were struggling to get open again.
So, a similar question for you, Sam. This is a team whose championship pedigree pretty much is built on that defensive line. Obviously, the big offseason signing was bringing in Olivier Vernon. So, how would you score the defensive line's performance tonight?
It wasn't great, to be honest. I think it's probably a B-minus performance from them. You know, Olivier Vernon did make some plays towards the end of the game in the run game. He's been pretty good. I just think they need some sort of interior pressure. It's really easy for quarterbacks to drop back and step up into the pocket against the Giants. Aaron Rodgers looks like he had a little success doing that tonight. But it's a work in progress. But I think on the outside, we're fine. It's now finding a way that we can manufacture pressure up the middle. So it'll be interesting to see how Steve Spagnuolo does that in the upcoming games, whether it's moving Olivier Vernon or Jason Pierre-Paul inside, or, you know, finding some other way to manufacture pressure.
Now, Brian, couldn't help but notice a really, really strong performance from Randall Cobb today. Do you attribute this just to having Jordy Nelson drawing attention to the other side of the field? What do you think he can attribute his really good game to?
I don't know that this is the reason, but he certainly seemed to want it more this game. You could see he was really fired up every time he caught the ball. He was flexing and kind of just it had a lot of fire in him today. I don't know. I assume he plays that way most weeks, but he seemed to want it. So I thought it came together for him. The ball came out on time, and we got it to when we did throw it to him. He was able to turn it into positive gains, and I think that kind of led to us trying to get the ball to him more. There were a couple uncharacteristic drops by Jordy Nelson in this game, and a tip that ended up getting intercepted. So I don't know if that played into the decision making at all, but we seemed to kind of go to Jordy less and less as the game went on. That first drive we threw to him a couple of times, but toward the end of the game, it was a lot of Davante Adams and Randall Cobb.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about Aaron Rodgers. 23 of 45, only averaged 5.8 yards per passing play, two touchdowns and two interceptions. That's a pretty average game in the NFL. And Aaron Rodgers has put out probably getting close to a season's worth of average quarterback play. Is he hitting a wall? What's going on with your boy Aaron there?
That's a good question. I don't exactly know. There have been a couple of times in about every game I can remember for the last year and a half where he used to have this trademark accuracy that the ball would guide itself into a tight window and the announcers would attribute that to Rodgers only being the only quarterback that can make a throw like that. I think we've seen that less and less. He seemed to sail his passes a little bit or throw off the mark a little bit more. And I don't know if that's him trying to turn, you know, what would be a double into a home run or kind of what might be going on there. There's been some, you know, under the table rumors about maybe there's an injury that he's dealing with. I don't know that we can really attribute it to that. But I don't know what else you can attribute it to other than just, you know, he's not being able to hit the ball with the kind of accuracy that we're used to seeing.
Sam, it's still early in the season, but what needs to change for your Giants to be a real contender for that NFC East title?
I think defense is fine. It's a new unit. They're going to learn to play together more and become more comfortable, and I think we'll be fine on that side of the ball. Again, it all comes down to this offense. I just need to see a little more creativity. You know, Bobby Rainey and Orleans Darkwood don't need to touch the ball more than seven times a game combined. It's just, why would you put the ball in non-skilled players' hands when you have Shepard and Cruz and Beckham out there? It just baffles me. It's just frustrating to watch. We just shoot ourselves in the foot a lot. It seems like when one thing starts working, we decide we need to go somewhere else instead of forcing the defense to stop it. I don't know. I need to see more from McAdoo at this point. His offense is extremely vanilla. Eli doesn't look comfortable. This line is horrendous. Eric Flowers is a turnstile. There's a lot of work to do on this offense. The weapons are there. It's just Eli's got to play better. The line's got to play better. And I think a little more creativity in the passing game would be useful.
All right, then my last question is going to be for the winner, Brian. What does Green Bay need to do in order to be able to threaten the Vikings for first place in your division?
The Vikings have definitely looked really strong so far this year, but honestly, I'm not scared of the Vikings. They, as much as any team in the NFL, have a history of choking when it comes time to win a meaningful game. You know, they're going to look good in the regular season. They have looked good in the regular season. There's nothing you can do to take that away from them. But, you know, until they prove me otherwise, I'm going to continue to believe that they're going to choke under pressure. And we just need to keep it within striking distance. And we'll be able to pull it out in the end. I think in terms of what the Packers need to do, a little bit more consistency on offense. I really liked what we saw last week where the ball came out on time every time. That offense was clicking. We were able to run the ball well enough. This game, we kind of went in fits and starts a little bit. I'd like to see us smooth out our offensive consistency. And I think if we can do that, we'll be in great shape because this defense is playing lights out as well.
All right, there you have it, Sam. Brian, guys, thank you so much. I will talk to you fellas next week.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this Sunday edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to Nick for all the hosting. Thank you to all the superfans for participating. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to BetDSI for their sponsorship. If you want to reach us, you can email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter, @NextFanUp. We are looking for a couple of superfans. If you didn't hear your team get represented, send in an application. We'd love to hear from you. Even if you're not a potential superfan, we just want to hear your opinions and your feedback. Tomorrow, we'll be coming out with our Power Rank show with the ever-popular Neil the Washington Fan. With that, I will leave you with the head coach of the team that is no longer in first place in the NFC West following their loss, Jeff Fisher of the LA Rams. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.